our final reading. It's a good thing to hope for help from God. I'll never forget the trouble, the utter lostness, the taste of ashes, the poison I've swallowed. I remember it all, oh how well I remember, the feeling of hitting bottom. But there's one thing I remember, and remembering, I keep a grip on hope. God's loyal love couldn't have run out. His merciful love couldn't have dried up. They're created new every morning. How great your faithfulness. I'm sticking with God. I say it over and over again. He's all I've got left. God proves to be good to the man who passionately waits, to the woman who diligently seeks. It's a good thing to quietly hope for help from God. It's a good thing when you're young to stick it out through the hard times. When life is heavy and hard to take, go off by yourself, enter the silence, bow in prayer, don't ask questions, wait for hope to appear. Don't run from trouble, take it full face. The worst is never worse. Why? Because the master won't ever walk out and fail to return. If he works severely, he also works tenderly. His stockpiles of loyal love are immense. He takes no pleasure in making life hard, throwing roadblocks in the way. And from Ecclesiastes, two people are better off than one, for they can help each other succeed. If one person falls, the other can reach out and help. But someone who falls alone is in real trouble. Likewise, two people lying close together can keep each other warm. But how can one be warm alone? A person standing alone can be attacked and defeated, but two can stand back and conquer. Three are even better, for a triple braided cord is not easily broken. So tonight's message is one not of my own words, but the words so well spoken by others. So it's fueled by Hurricane Laura, the strongest hurricane to hit Louisiana in over 150 years, and my not quite front row seat to its devastation. See, Lake Charles, Louisiana is my hometown. Ooh, this can be hard. It's the place my great-grandfather in 1926, no, not now, my great-grandfather in 1926 started our family business at the Port of Lake Charles when it opened in 1926. It's where five generations of Austins have roots and connections to the people and the life of Southwest Louisiana. It's where I have a nephew who works as a sheriff deputy, and he's been on duty 24/7 since the night of the hurricane with no end in sight. It's the place where my childhood friends and their families still live. And now, in a blink of an eye, it's a place of devastation that looks like a war zone. Seeing the pictures, nothing was spared. Buildings collapsed, windows blown out. I saw a picture yesterday that had, we have one tall building downtown, and they showed a picture of it after Hurricane Rita, which came in that same path 15 years ago, versus Hurricane Laura. And Rita had maybe 10% of the windows blown out of this high rise, and Hurricane Laura, almost every window's gone, and that's how significantly different they were. Roofs ripped off. Huge trees are downed on houses and blocking streets, power lines and poles. They're tossed to the ground. They look like toothpicks lying around. It's a place with no electricity for 4 to 6 weeks and no water up to possibly 60 days. It's a place right now with over 100 degree heat indexes and no air conditioning. The material and the emotional losses incurred, they're significant and they're going to take years to recover. So what I thought I would do tonight is help us see this extreme situation from the eyes of those who are actually living through this nightmare, yet who are also seeing the beauty in the storm. I believe there's a connection between what they're experiencing and the storms that each of us have either faced, we're currently facing, or we're going to face in our lives and in our society. So to get an understanding of what it's like when a hurricane is heading towards your town, I found a couple of writings as I've been reading the Facebook post, and there was this one, it's an antique store called 81, and the people who must own it write these they're called Uncle P's Bedtime Stories, and he posted a couple of them, and they're just really beautiful way of capturing what it's like to what they're going through. So here, I thought I'd share a couple of them with you, and these are all directly from him. The first one's called The Morning After the Hurricane. We locals fall into two categories, the stayers and the leavers. The stayers. There is no sleep for the stayers. There are no sounds like hurricane sounds. When a category 3 or 4 comes in the night, great and mighty with mystery and magnitude, a stayer can only hear and imagine the unseen. As their home, within their neighborhood, within their community, within the town, and all the trees and all the roofs, everything higher than a blade of grass is assaulted by great power. Outside the home, the wind. Inside the mind, the thoughts. When will it end? I should have left. Never again. The sturdy house starts to feel like an eggshell, and the inhabitants feel like yolks floating in the fragile. Many times, the stayer is alone, a lonely yolk indeed. The leavers. There isn't much sleep for the leavers either. They went, but not often far enough. And whether a town away or a state away, they wonder and worry as the hours tick by about homes and businesses, churches and schools, but mostly they worry about people. The meteorologist will tell you about storm surge, but they don't say anything about adrenaline surge. We worried it was coming, worried about its path, worried about securing everything in a frantic day of manual labor, worried as we drove and then waited to worry in the night. All that worry is just pump, pump, pump on the adrenaline gland. An hour here, check the phone, another try at sleep, but up looking for updates. Most leavers are long in the chair before sunrise. The cost. Most leavers consider it a wise thing to do, but there's a cost. The cost is not knowing. Next morning, you see images of damages, and you imagine it's your fate too. But there's nobody to ask because all the neighbors left too. First thing I saw this morning was a picture of a broken church. If wind did this, what would it do to a regular house? That's the other cost, this escalating fee of awfulizing. I've never heard that word, awfulizing. Where bad gets worse, not in fact, but in our minds. The many become one. In a year like 2020, where we divided up as to whether we loved or hated or just tolerated our president, where we were stressed over COVID and all the dominoes that fall from that, and if that weren't enough, we divided again over racial tensions, over which lives mattered and which statues should stay or go, everything felt so splintery and fractured. And then, hey, cherry on top, we get a dangerous hurricane to boot. But what the hurricane unintentionally does is bring us together. It's we against it, instead of me against you. We checked on each other, worried about each other, and last night when the hurricane hit, it hit us. And this morning, a roofless house of a stranger makes me sad, as if it was my own. I just wanted to throw away my stupid COVID mask and hug strangers. There is great power in unifying. We become more like ants in all the good ways of ants. There were stayers who became first responders, drove around with chainsaws, and cleared trees from roads. We'll all return and grab a hold and grab a role, helping neighbors, being good us, tough us, best us. In a few weeks, it'll be way different. A year from now, it'll be hard to remember what it looked like, just like it was for the last hurricane. End of his story. So I look at that and I'm going, how often is that our story too, having to decide between options and not sure of what to do, which decision is the best one, and then we agonize in going one direction or another or another. So very similar that we in our storms face similar decisions. So after the hurricane came through, then Uncle P's bedtime story posted this. And again, this unknowing is our unknowing as well. And he called it the search for knowing. When you leave for a hurricane, you not only leave your home, you leave your knowing. You knew the rooms in your house, knew the trees in your yard. You knew the scenery of the streets you often drove, knew the landmarks of your city, and all of it, the whole sense of knowing, is now only a used to know. The morning after. The morning after the hurricane, we all want to know again. From the day after Laura passed, how many of us looked towards home from afar, hours on the internet, picture after picture from stranger after stranger, of streets that look like strangers, of streets we've never traveled, and major streets we have, but hardly recognize for the left-behind litter of nature when she gets her mean on. Trees here, power pole there, parts of roofs and signs, a great democracy of damage. People keep using the same adjectives, war zone, obliterated, OMG. You can't imagine pictures don't do it justice. As time passes, people we know tell us what they know, a picture of their home, and we shake our heads side to side and wish to hug them. And they say the honorable thing. Could be worse. We're all alive. Things can be replaced. And still, we don't know about our home. Numbness. As the hours pass by, there's a certain numbness that sets upon us, like fog and dew, except it's hard and heavy. All we used to know about our town is now of no use. We grow numb to horizontal trees and houses leaned on, bashed in, crushed, decapitated. And still we don't know about our home. More people find out their truth. People with money, people without, people we truly like, and people we barely know. The damage is so random, it hurts your heart. The people who should just crumple to their knees, too old for this, plates too full for this, people who were one straw away from breaking the camel's back, have an oak breaking through the living room. And look how honorable they are, quoting a Bible verse instead of cussing at heaven. And still we don't know about our home. Finally, knowing. Having seen bad and then worse by far, what do we feel we find when we finally see our home and know that we got off light? I was on the phone with someone who didn't lose a single shingle, gratitude in her voice, and then she started crying. Couldn't explain why. Two roads. Nothing seems so goddish as nature, and nothing causes more prayers than nature out to get us. Please, please, even if we don't know what to say next, please, please. The older you are, the more you know about loss. The more you know about loss, the more you know about healing. You trust the process. If you can get over the first bad death, you can get over rain falling into your house. There's a wisdom in acceptance. It's so smart, it's almost street smart. But you don't have to skip the steps. If you're mad, be mad. If sad, be sad. If you're so full of feelings that you can't even label them anymore, go on. Call it soup, call it stew, call it a bad meal. But know this, there are two roads in every mind. Count your losses and count your blessings. The one sees debris about their feet. The other is looking up and doesn't miss sunrise, sunset, or the rainbow between. When we feel out of control, we look to the one who is. We do not know the ways of God. As for myself, I have believed, quit believing, returned to believing. I'm old enough to see the quilt in me, the patch here, the patch there, the things I notice and appreciate about who I am now, all come from healed loss. With every taken, I've been given. Every time I'm thinned, I'm thickened. God knows my name. I tell myself that as I write this. I feel appropriately insignificant, small, in a prideless way. And I believe it, that God knows me and knows you. That life is tough seemed unfair to me when I was younger. If I were God, I'd think, but thank goodness I'm not. The tough times are required. I pity, almost despise, the softness I used to be. If I have any emotional muscle, if I have any power prime, if anything about me is qualified for life ahead, it's directly related to what I gained going through my hard times. God doesn't intend us to be soft. He loves his children, but we are meant to be weaned and grow into our complicated, competent adult selves. Eyes up, heart up, mind up. The body follows. This I know. End of story. So as Uncle P suggested, it's important to count our blessings when we're in difficult times. And I've been following intensely since Tuesday, or probably since last Monday, the hurricane and all the aftermath and postings. And what I've witnessed over and over during this time is the love and compassion and care that is being shown by complete strangers. I call it love in action. And this is what God intended our world to be, the things that I'm seeing down there. And it's the healing ointment in these times of distress. I followed the Cajun Navy, and if you've never heard of the Cajun Navy, it's a group of civilians. They're just everyday people, and they activate when disasters hit, and they mobilize these teams. They just are ready, and they come carrying their boats, right? So these are like Cajun people, and they have their boats in tow in case it's a flood, and they need to go rescue people in their boats. They clear down trees in the roads, power lines. They rescue animals. They provide food. All of these different teams coordinate. And I was listening to one of the guys, one of the leaders, and he said for the 50 people that you see there collectively, there's 10 people behind each person, behind the scenes, doing all the logistics and the securing all these things that they're able to bring. They do whatever it takes, wherever it takes them. And they do it with the greatest servant heart. My childhood neighbor, he was traveling from where he lives in Austin over to Florida, and he happened to pass through our hometown the day of the hurricane last Thursday. And he posted that he saw, what are those electric trucks? You know, the ones that have the little buckets and they go up and fix the lines? He saw them from when he left Austin all the way to Florida, lined up, ready to go. Hundreds of trucks with the linemen, ready to go to Lake Charles to repair the electricity. These people, they're leaving their families to care for those that are without power, knowing that they're going to be working 16-hour days in 100-degree heat, doing really dangerous work, so tired and dangerous work. Yet they come, and they come by the hundreds. My best friend from high school, and she started out as my college roommate, she actually stayed during the hurricane, and like 2 days afterwards, she posted in this Facebook group for aftermath of the hurricane that they had run out of gas for their generator about 5 a.m. So she makes this post at 5 a.m, which for her, she said it was okay, except their 89-year-old mother-in-law who has health issues, that wasn't going to be okay in the heat index that they were facing. So she posted on this website. By 6 a.m., right, posted at 5 a.m., by 6 a.m., a complete stranger from out of town, he not only drove to her house, he filled up both of her generators, brought a case of water and cash, saying that we're all in this together. Wants nothing more. All he knows is his name is Tony Trahan. That's it. Moments like this will forever be seared in her heart. Even as her daughter's home was completely destroyed, my friend's heart was able to experience the love of another in her time of need. As early as the day of the storm, I heard stories of people in one of our main streets, Ryan Street, was devastated. But there were people out there with their grills, grilling food for free, just drive by and get food. I heard individuals and churches and other ministries have already rolled into town by Thursday to prepare thousands of meals for free. One group I was reading about last night, they're from Houston, which is 2 hours away from my hometown. They fed 700 people yesterday, and posted that they had to go back to Houston, but they would be back this morning to feed again. But they had to reload up on their supplies. Yep. Surrounding towns and states are flooding into town with supplies and offers from help. And the list goes on and on. Everywhere I'm seeing, there's just this beauty of love that's being shown. And for me, this is what God meant when he said, love one another. These are the blessings that fill the hearts with gratitude in the storms of life. So for me, it's like, where are we supposed to be in love to each other and one another, no matter what? Thank you. As we leave tonight, may you go and be love to the strangers that you meet, the people that you know closest to you. And a special request, if you can just keep the people in Louisiana and East Texas in your prayers as they look in the days and the weeks and the months to come. Their lives aren't going to be the same. So if you can just send a few prayers that way, we appreciate that. Amen.